Welcome to the Ozoza Lifestyle Crucial Conversations podcast. Today, we are honored to have Kenechukwu Ogbagu with us. Kenechukwu Ogbagu is the founder of Nib Card Games, and Nib Card Games is a tabletop publishing and design and manufacturing company. Nib Card Games started in 2013 and has since designed, manufactured, and promoted 29 Made in Nigeria tabletop games, including manufacturing for clients, and has also introduced a tabletop games convention and opened the first tabletop games cafe in Nigeria. Welcome, Kenechukwu. It's a real pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Aziza. Thank you for the invite. Every opportunity to talk about the industry, it's a privilege and I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're most welcome. So I'm really fascinated by what Nib Card Games does and the games and the design. And I'm really quite intrigued, as I'm sure many of our listeners are. How would you define what Nib Card Games actually does?
Thinking about it now, I'm starting what we do is to inspire people, to give people hope. To be able to create what they want to do, especially in the tabletop games industry. And that sums up everything that we do. So we are basically a designing, manufacturing, and promotional company. And what that means is we look out for concepts, ideas, and we offer services that once you come into our company, we can take your own ideas or your concepts and we turn it into a game that people can play. You know, there will be a rule book and they enjoy the game even when you're not there to explain. And then we also take on to manufacture them here in Nigeria. And what that does is, like I said, it gives hope to people. So instead of looking at the places where you can get the services, because I know when I started in 2013, there was absolutely no place where I could, you know, it was even weird to have that conversation with people that wanted to design a game. You know, if I wanted to go to a cafe, there was no board game cafe, so it's normal cafes. If I wanted to go there, you see books, but you don't see games. And if I wanted to print my games, the people that are printing doesn't even know it's possible. They can print books, they can print banners, posters, but they can't print games. So, but what we've done over the years is to be able to learn a lot, mostly self-taught, and then we try to build on existing networks on the global community, and we'll try to link up and, you know, formed that company, that structure that now inspires other people to, you know, come and create their own games or want to start their own game night. Or even want to start their own cafes and convention. And these are already evident in states across Nigeria. So I think in a nutshell, what we do is we give hope to people, especially in the tabletop games industry.
Yes. A quick question based on what you've just said. So is everything, are all the materials being manufactured in Nigeria? All the materials for your games?
No, unfortunately. It could, but because of the market, so especially things like the plastic, so there are the dies and the miniatures, those are small plastic tokens you used to play. We've met a couple of plastic companies in Nigeria. It can be done, but the quantity that they are requesting as minimum order is something that we cannot afford now, and especially because the market is still young. So since we can get it on smaller quantities, we try to bring in those. And it still falls under what we do because of we have those products called board game kits. We have about 5 different board game kits with different components inside. They're also clearly labeled on the box. And what these do is some people have never seen a 3-sided dice before, or 8-sided dice before, 12-sided dice, 20-sided dice, just the 6-sided dice that we play with Ludo. So what we do is we bring out all of these components that we've been privileged to get and took some miniatures that do not exist in the Nigerian market, and we've coupled it and packaged it so people can not just have access to them, but also begin to understand the, for instance, the measurements in the industry. So the blank board, the sizes of the cards, it's more like the self-education once they buy, oh, so this is the size of the card and all of that. Mm-hmm.
So they start to learn how to produce. Essentially, they start to see how the production can happen domestically.
I don't know, to be honest, but what we do is we share videos of how we make our game. So it's not something that we're trying to hide. So anyone can actually, who follows us closely, can learn what we do. On our YouTube channel, we have a full video on how to make a particular game that's funded by an organization. So if actually people follow us closely, they would be able to make the game themselves.
By the question, I actually meant people who can produce for Nib card games so that maybe at some point a lot of the items can be produced, the material in Nigeria, you know, so people start to see, you know, your value chain in a sense. So is sourced domestically long term. Yes. I'd like to actually understand what inspired you to start Nib card games, what the inspiration was behind it.
Okay, that one is funny. In 2013, there was ASUU strike, and you know, we were all bored. I was bored, and I have a friend that was even more bored. Like, we tried lifting weights in the compound. You need to see me then. I was so slim, and then he was slim, and he's a medical student, you know, bookworm and all. We tried lifting, that it didn't work. We said, okay, let's try swimming. Let's go to our place where we could just swim. It did not work. And I think the last, we even said, okay, well, at the time I used to volunteer with some organizations to go in school. So, okay, let's go and teach in school. Said, no, I'm not sure the student will understand what I'm teaching. So let's just, and then I think the last suggestion was, let's go to the Israeli's game house, PS2, could just play just outside the lodge. We went there. I know how to play. It didn't understand what was happening. It didn't like those kind of stuff. So and I said, okay, I would design a very boring game for you. That was the line. And I just got drawing board, and then cardboard, pencil, eraser, stones, and tokens. And then we just designed, I did for Ludo Dice. And we played, and it was very long. You know, Ukubo, that's the name of the game. You know, you play with, it's about the journey of an average young Nigerian, so from the just from growing up to the old age, but real life things that could happen, and then how it costs you or it brings you rewards. So we played that game. We played in the compound. At the time, I didn't even know it was something. I know shortly after, I think ASUU called off the strike and school resumed. You know, medical students, once school starts, it's good.
Yes.
And I'm sure we didn't really bring out the game again till 2015. So if you imagine, after almost 2 years before we brought that game again. But between those periods, I already selling graphics from a friend who made me pay, you know.
Yes.
And I'm so glad he did that, so that I would probably have taken it for granted. So yes. For 1 hour, you pay me 1,000. That was 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So for 1 hour, you pay me 2,000. 1,000. For 1 hour, you pay me 1,000. And within 8 hours, I got all I could, because I don't have, I mean, a student, where do you have $1 to be paying for?
Yes, that's right, yes.
I got the basics thing I needed to know on CorelDRAW. I went on YouTube and finished the rest. So I think these were the biggest thing that inspired, that started Nib card. But I think the inspiration was in 2015 when I met other young people. I started volunteering with this organization. And we were in Lagos working in a rural community in Ikorodu, actually. And you know, they were from UK and another team from Kenya and we from Nigeria. So I think it created that atmosphere where we are cross-cultural change and people from UK is already one of the hotspots for tabletop games.
Yes.
And I mean, they brought their own games,
yes.
Just small card games and all. Like, there and then I saw that it was more, I've been saying it, that anyone can design their own game. Why do people stick to Monopoly, Chess, Scrabble?
Yeah.
But it didn't make sense, because I didn't, probably out of laziness, I didn't try to research for that. It was just, it's gone. Let me focus on my lifestyle.
Yes.
But when I saw these young people with those games and they were teaching, I said, no, I have to bring out that. Where is that? I know I've done something like this. And I brought it out and they appreciated it. I would play it often. And they requested, can you do another one, an easier one? Remember the first one was for, there was a reason for that. So can you do an easy one, like about Nigeria? And EJ came out. We've not even published EJ yet.
Wow.
But EJ was what I designed based on request within the 3 months. And they requested for another one. And I did that again. And I thought it was easy.
Yeah.
But for them, it was hard. That was where I started to realize, okay, this could be something. And I entered the internet and I saw that there is even someone alive that designed 650 games. I saw how big the industry is. And I saw the U.S. economy, what it means to the U.S. economy, Australia, China. I saw that this is massive.
Yeah.
And so I think that was where the whole concept of, you know, turning this into a company started. And
yes.
Yeah, we are here now.
That's fascinating, isn't it? But so there was a passion and a necessity, and it came. I like the fact that it emerged organically. You know, did you have in mind at the time who your target market would be? Was that something that came up or has come up now, or is that the whole concept of a target market? Is that something you explore?
To be honest, I feel game is. I think games is for everyone. Game is for everyone. Anyone can play game. The old, the young, and it's actually one of the pillars of what we are building on. Regardless of any prejudice, stereotype, regardless of class, regardless of religion, you know, you see a game comes out on the table, and all of those things suddenly doesn't make sense anymore. It's now about winning. And team member is a cooperative game. So
yes.
I think game is for everyone. But yes, we have targeted market for games that we have. So there are games, you know, that this is a party game. So and then there are games, you know, that this is for schools. So there are games, you know, this is we have an SDG game. We sell to NGOs. So we have targeted market for each of the products. But in totality, I think game is for everyone.
Yes, I like what you said about how people disregard all these other superficial barriers that the human beings create themselves, and you know, whether it's culture, race, or whatever, because that's so true of sport. You know, when people are playing a football match or a cricket match or whatever, people forget all those things and focus on strategy and winning the game and skilling up. So the games you're producing, they're an intellectual sport. You know, they're an intellectual sport, which I think human beings naturally enjoy engaging in these kinds of things. It's somehow part of our DNA to engage in this kind of almost very inspiring, engaging, positive, you know, kind of competition with your fellow human being. I feel that there's a natural inclination for the human beings to engage in this. Do you agree with that?
I agree. I think once it's now that engagement, and especially when there is reward for the first person to achieve something, there is that emotion that comes in, and that's the beauty of it. So, the cafe has given us the opportunity to see so many things. And you see someone walking, and person like, at first, the person will start with, if it's not chess, I'm not playing. No. Or if it's not Scrabble, I'm not playing. No, those ones they know, especially the influencers in the team. Because a group could come in and you know that one person that says, let's go, everybody will say, let's go. And we just find ways. Over the time, we've learned how to, when someone comes in, we just look at you from your, it's sometimes lucky guess, but we have 3 to 5 games, you know, one will appeal to this kind of person.
Yeah.
And once that happens, the person forgets Scrabble, forgets Monopoly, because the emotion is now there.
Yes.
Even if you don't like the game, but Nami go win them. I will win this thing.
There's Interesting.
And if it means for you to partner with another person, or if it means for you to betray somebody, if it means for you to call bluffs, or you have to win. That's what it is.
And it's interesting what you've just said about how different games appeal to different personality types.
Yeah,
I find that quite interesting, as you know, even as an approach to, I don't know, engaging certain personality types in different activities, or even trying to, from an educational perspective, even trying to sort of educate and raise consciousness of particular personality types, doing it via particular types of games that they will respond to as an educational tool, you know, with a psychological kind of backdrop, as in, okay, this type of child, this type of profile will actually respond more positively to this type of game. So let's teach them this particular concept through this type of game. That's quite fascinating.
I agree with that, because even in teaching, there are children that respond more to visual, there are children that respond to auditory, and then even kinesthetic. So it's more of tailoring people to games that they, because that is when you get the maximum, whether it's fun that you want to achieve or it's awareness that you want to achieve. And that's one of the things we are currently combating in Nigeria. So because we have limited games, about 8 or 9 of them, so the old classics of Scrabble, Draft, Ludo, Mancala, now, because that was the only game, Snake and Ladder, those were the only games they were limited. So people could easily stereotype those games or the players. So you see, any person that is playing Ludo most likely are lazy women are the ones playing Ludo, and then lazy men and drunkards are playing Draft.
Okay.
And then smart kids are playing chess.
Mm-hmm.
Aburus are playing Scrabble on the street, and then stouts are wherever you see words, they are gambling.
Yes.
You know, and then Monopoly is for people that like finance. All of those games, you can easily stereotype them because they are one. But when you now know that there are over 1 million games,
yes,
there is so much. No one person can, no one game can be associated to one group of people. Someone can say, I love to play Ludo, and it doesn't mean that I don't have any other thing to do. I'm just enjoying this. And because of limitation around chess being for smart kids, you now see that there are other kids that would have played chess and would have sort of helped them up. But because now there's a level to it, they are afraid. Yeah. And you see, the same kids is being able to understand a rule book of a game that is even harder than chess to play. Because there are games that there are games that you have to read the rule books. Well, one of our games is about 12 pages with the rule book. And there are games that here that the rule book are over 40 pages.
Wow.
And you see that the same person will be able to comprehend this game and offer the strategies. But because we so say that chess is for smart kids, they never want to play chess again. So that's the thing about tailoring games to people. And we hope that with time, people will see that there are more options. That if I don't like this one, it doesn't mean that board games are bad. You would like Nollywood, or there are so many options. You can't say you don't like watching movies. Even people that say that they watch documentary or news, there's so many visuals to watch. Yeah. That's the same thing with tabletop.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, so if we look at some of the games, the wonderful games that you've designed, So if I choose a game like, say, Chiyawa, which has been a real success and is very popular, how would you describe the objective of a game like Chiyawa, and what's the story behind it, and what's the objective of it as a game?
So for us, generally, when I design a game, there is this overarching objective of adding a piece of Africa in it. I use Africa because it could just be anything. Could be I know Ukubwa is the first game I designed, its name is a Swahili name. I just spent time in Kenya, and I met people, and so, but most times it's Nigerian stories. Objective could be make sure the name has a Nigerian name, so that way someone will be able to pronounce this particular name. Or it could be the whole game. The whole theme of the game is about a folklore in Nigeria or African country. So it has, there's, but the value or the level at which differs according to them. So I'm giving this context because of Chiyawa. So Chiyawa is, at the time it was designed, I think it was the fourth demo we released, 2016 or so, was I wanted to bring out people from old classic games. Mm. So, and I was thinking, what is that thing that they already are close to, familiar to in a game? I was guys who play Ludo, and then Vampire, that dice mechanics, and then we have to look out for a story that we can relate to. For me, from the southeast part of Nigeria, first time I started staying in the north, I started seeing a lot of cows. When I was in the east, I used to be afraid of cows. If it's coming, all of us are running away. But now I can be touching it. These are shocks that happen in Nigeria. People take it for granted, but we don't. I think creatives don't take those things for granted. Yeah. So I said, okay, what should I do at the time? So 2016, I just started living in the north, so it was cow. And that was how Chiyawa came in. I said, okay, dice rolling, feeding your own cattle, and then because of it being in a ranch, in a secured location, and then turn it into a competition. Now, anyone that wants to play Chiyawa will know that Chiyawa is at Hausa. Now, where is Hausa? And you could just learn more. And then, but the game concept is just, it's a dice rolling game where you move, you race to feed your own cattle. So right. Each of the players are an animal wearers. You have your cow, your horse. They're all ruminant animals, so and they are racing for the grass. And grass in Hausa means chiyawa.
Yes. Okay. So it's a herding. You know, people who have a career in being herdsmen. It's basically understanding that dynamic and also getting an insight into that part of the culture where you know this is a lot of people's livelihood and really understanding how that economy itself works. And then understanding a lot of the focal points of the original focal point of the Hausa herdsmen. That's quite fascinating because they're getting an insight into the Hausa culture, regardless of where they are from.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And then knowing that there are limited resources in an enclosed space. So you have to race for that.
Yes, and that's very topical actually these days, the fact that you have limited resources, limited avenues for movement. And so what can we also learn from a game like Village War? What was the inspiration for Village War?
Village War is, I could spend the whole day talking about Village War because it's huge, it's a clan on its own, it's a universe on its own. So the whole concept of Village War is it's a spirit being playing game, it's a card drafting game, it's a resource management game, and the theme is built on the history, the folklore, the myths, and fantasies of the Igbo culture. So we mixed all of these things together. Every character we use, we have 55 characters on the Village War. Each of them have Igbo names. I'm not talking of English names that are translated to Igbo. Like mine is an English name that was translated to Igbo.
Okay.
It's not really an Igbo name. Kenechukwu simply means thank God. It's more like when we Christianity came to us and then we were given English name and it was translated exactly. Yes. So that's 55 Igbo names, and we have artifacts. Those are spiritual artifacts and their powers and all. And Village War is the story we use real life stories of how Eri descended on the Igbo, the first Igbo land, which is Nri, and it's in existence today, and how he made a deal with Chiuku, and how he gave up his immortality so that he could become human and raise family, and then how he had to sign a faith, and that faith is that the day they divide, the day his children eventually separate, that day the calamity of the gods will come upon them. And these are like hundreds of years ago. But with time, populations started increasing, and then even other chief, who were Eri's friend, came then even married some of Eri's children, does this now give a hierarchy of the system in Igbo? The royals, the spirituals, the animal summoners, the warriors, so there are four class. And then how greed came in and they separated, and that was where the war started, the Ten Village War, the calamity that brought the tears of the gods. And this is part one out of five games that are already done. So there is part two, So part one is where each village is fighting for resources. And part two is where each village is now trying to fight off the foreign invaders.
Yes.
You know. And then the part three is where one of the villages will betray the rest, because eventually the British conquered the Igbo people between 910 and 912, and then amalgamated Nigeria in 914. So that means we are conquered. So one person must have betrayed, and that was what our party says. Then part four will be where, that's the one I'm actually looking forward to, where there will be 22 Igbo gods with their powers, the sun god, the moon god, the fertility god, all of them. And players now get, so the children of Eri got angry and now turn their verse in quote to Chioku. So, and then they start fighting. It was, part four is the craziest. I can't wait for And then part five is now the fate that that was agreed upon in the beginning. Now that I will not say. I want people to be able to play with that. So the real, the thing that happened where that was agreed on, that the day your children separate, something will happen. And that is what part five does. And that's the reality of the Igbo tribe right now.
Right. This is my question just now. To how much is fact, how much is fiction, you know, contents?
I don't know how, someone has never really asked, now that I'm thinking about it, the years we used for the whole journey is the correct year. Yeah. And the reason is that someone would like probably just punch that year on Google and type Igbo people, and you see something related to. So the names that we use are all, the caste system we use are still the same. The powers that we adapted are the powers that you could see. I think the fantasy is the build-up of the story, how we joined this truth and this truth and this truth, and we coined it into one, and then maybe in the illustrations, the oversized body parts, weapons. I think that's where that happens.
So that is a really thorough history lesson for anybody who plays that game in Igbo culture, and really the different aspects of the culture, which is fascinating, isn't it? And a lively way of learning about the culture as well, rather than a dry textbook way.
So before you start playing, you first read this 12-page book that narrates everything for you. So you get in the vibe, and then this is the rule book.
Right.
So the rule book will just basically show you how to play. Then it comes with over 1 hour sound, theme sound.
Yes.
In case you want to play a war Igbo song, we went to the studio to record one. So you just get into the mood. And it's crazy. I'm proud of it.
Wow. Do you have a favorite game, or a couple of favorite games? Or are you not allowed to say that? Do you have to be fair to all your children?
I think I get excited in seasons with each game. Yeah. It just comes. I could just go back and say, okay, this is the one I just want to. And I think the more there are games, the more it's hard
Yes. Yes. So, one of the games I'm quite intrigued by is can you unwrap the concept of Battle of Adrika for us as well? That's another really popular one. So, what is the concept behind
Adrika? So, we have an expansion, and the expansion can also be played as a standalone. So, it means you can get the expansion and be able to play it. But the game started with a base that we designed in 2017. And the whole idea was, I was just thinking, so I'm sure there were a lot of things that have triggered this thought, reading about colonialism or all of those stuff. And I think, what if the meeting, no, it's popular, if you see the image, the round table in Africa being divided, it's almost everywhere. What if it was not peaceful? What if this round sitting men somehow did not agree on how to divide Africa and all the resources? And then they now left and they started sending their own troops to now capture lands and all. So that's the baseline of what the game is about. So it's called the Battle of Adrika. And players basically are troop commanders from representing their own countries, flags, and they all have objectives. There are main objectives, there are also minor objectives. So main objectives are like things you need to do. You must do it to earn higher points. And the minor objectives are things that you can do. If you do them, you get extra, but you don't have to. And some of those things are, some of the minor objectives are things I felt could have happened. Some will be like secure a region that has cocoa, or you must secure a region that has diamond to get 4 points, or you must secure a region that have crude to get 4 points, and then all of those stuff. Or there's even a minor objective that says influence one nation against another. You know, right. And once you're able to achieve it, you share everybody that this is actually what the objective says.
Yes.
No, there's just all of those crazy things I'm just thinking, you know, I'll just be putting them inside the game. But I think in a nutshell, it's about acquiring regions and gathering, and the regions also matters, you know, based on the resources that are inside. So
yes.
The person that is able to gather the most and eliminate as much other people's soldiers as possible wins the game.
Interesting. So people are also really getting a big picture, sort of bird's eye view of power dynamics and the scramble for resources, you know?
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yes.
Now you see people getting angry. I'm like, well, it's so funny. When someone gets angry, I'm like, do you know that it's actually humans that live in those places, you're firing your bomb and firing your gun anyhow? You know, because people don't think about, wow. Thing that I'm thinking about, there should be something that probably another expansion that shows people need to know that they are human beings in those
regions.
Yeah. They are angry that they didn't get it, that someone else got it.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You just giving me another assignment.
Yes, that's right. So the humanization of the consequence, you know? And the humanization of the people on the other end also needs to be sort of, you know, dramatized or put into game form. How they have responded, how they have been affected by the actions of others. Because I think it's very easy in life to do things if you dehumanize or you collectivize or you don't think about the consequence deeply and you kind of separate yourself from others.
Mm.
It's easy to just decide to do anything, you know. But if you're really maintaining a high level of consciousness and thinking, okay, if I do this, this is going to affect this person, and I wouldn't like it if that happened to me, so I'm not going to do that. And why wouldn't they be as upset as I am? I'm a person like them. We're all human beings, the same condition. If you humanize things, then it's much harder to do things that are antisocial or unethical or, you know, immoral. Actually, it's much harder because, you know, you wouldn't do something to hurt yourself, you know. You just say, no, I can't do this. I'm stepping out. This is because if this happened to me, it's a disaster, you know? So I think human beings are only able to do certain things because they have dehumanized, you know, things that are unethical and immoral. I feel when they dehumanize it, you know, when they separate themselves from the people who are being negatively affected, because if you, in the same way that somebody would never do it to somebody they love, you know what I mean? Yeah. But they'll say, oh, I don't know those people, they're different, then they dehumanize them. But if you say, actually, no, that person is just like this other person that I love, and they're just like me, and they hurt like me, why would I be involved in that?
There's this movie an anime, and a prince that I think is the heir, and someone died for him, and he was mourning, and you know, like, this person actually loved me so much and all of those. And a priest was like, he didn't love you because that was not love. And I think it boils down to what you just said now about, he said he, and that was what happened. The bodyguard that died just witnessed a village of 69 people murdered just to protect the prince, so that the prince can have a room to stay. So the prince says, if it was real love, that guy would not sit and watch 69 people murdered just because of him. And that the love was just because it's you. If you are not you,
yeah,
will not have loved you. And he gave the guy, I think that was the breaking point for the guy to mature as a human. Yes. I guess, but this is what you're trying to say. And bringing it in games, in this particular game, Battle of Africa, is something I understand that you have to win this particular region so that you win the game. But as you're doing that, you should know that this is the real damage of what you actually did. So if you have the mind to still want to win the game, now this is the death toll of what happened.
Yes, exactly.
I hope people don't cry after playing.
Well, we're going to take them on a ride through all these different emotions, aren't we? It's going to be very dramatic, you know. I mean, this brings me on to the other thought I'm having whilst you're talking is that, you know, what is your hope that the player will get, you know, from these games? What is your hope? You know, every time somebody plays your games, what are you hoping that they learn, that they receive?
I think first is to enjoy it. They have to enjoy it first. I love it that people enjoy the game. And maybe that's one of my fault. But once they enjoy it, every other thing comes. If those are games that were designed for specific purpose, you usually have feedback for that. And they also have facilitators, so people that will teach the game and they have whatever they want to achieve. But when people come into the cafe, I feel like let them just play the game. Once they play it, every other thing just happens. It happens. It's just like, say, just eat the food. Don't worry, your body now knows what to take. I start seeing people. It depends. There are so many other things that could just happen. Maybe soft skills that they start getting without even knowing it. There are some that they don't talk to people, but now they are now arguing or bluffing. So it depends. But once someone enjoys the game, and I think that is what both advert and learning, I think those are things that they always look out for. That point where emotions comes out, just like you said, engaging, that engagement and that emotion, there is that thing that it does that you're just open. Anything you learn, anything you take in, you always remember. Just a good example is when I think Steve Jobs, I think the first time he launched the iPod, he came out and the iPod was 8 gig then, and 8 gig was, 8 gig. And then instead of saying 8 gig, 8 gig was still huge then. You know, we had music that was just 200 kilobytes. I remember in school we doing infrared TV. So, but instead of saying 8 gig, he said this thing that you are seeing here has the capacity to contain music that would enable you to travel to the moon and come back. Now, it's not emotion is inside there now. Like, geez, can somebody even travel to the moon? That is just the whole, you're no longer thinking about 8 gig. Just that small thing, I can go to the moon. And you start thinking, oh, and there are people planning to go to the moon. So it's about a lot of learning happening inside you without even knowing. And I think that's one of the things, play learning, which tabletop game is part of.
Yes.
Once someone enjoys the game, everything follows immediately without knowing anything.
Yes, I mean, a lot of psychologists say that, you know, learning and change happens when you have the intellectual and the emotional coming together. You know, whether somebody is in a happy state when they're doing something and they're going to learn it and enjoy it, whether somebody's imagination has gone off, like you've said, to the moon, or like, wow, I can really, you know, there's once that kind of transportation in some way happens, or there's an emotional, you know, I'm having fun, I'm feeling competitive, I'm happy, or I'm being frustrated, that emotional and intellectual synergy is the soil required for these, you know, these gems to be planted, the skill base to be incorporated in somebody. So this is also leading on to what I was going to ask next. You've covered it to an extent. One of the questions I was going to ask is the extent to which you think it's a good tool for promoting learning, and the extent to which you're trying to bring it into school curriculums and, you know, educational institutions.
What we are more focused on as a company is to be able to design to manufacture and promote game. And this is because I recognize that the value chain is massive, and I try as much as possible to do the bit to just touch some of the value chain so that people can see that it's doable. But I still try to focus growth on these three. And why am I saying this? That I recognize that, you know, teamwork with government, teamwork with schools, putting these games in this, because I know the value. And Montessori schools, schools that emulate like UK or US education system, here in Abuja, for that, like, they're using it. They're using a lot of games, a lot of board games. But our own schools, so many things, there are so many reasons why it could happen or it could not happen. And those things are a little beyond my focus right now. So I more like tell people that there are so many games, and these games can do this, that, or this, depending on what you want. And if these are not the things you want, okay, we can also help you bring out the ones you need. And we make them here, so you don't have to think of the leads when we're trying to finally bring them here. And so that's the promotion, because we make games, we make them here, and these are the things. So it's not left for people to now begin to, you know, think of applications. Do I want this set up in my lounge, in the airport, in the hospital waiting room, in schools? The application is in churches and from the school. Instead of forcing those children to be climbing Bibles, why not turn it into a game? And they are playing and they are learning those things. There are so many applications that games can.
And what suggestions do you have in terms of, you know, so promoting more critical thinking, creativity, and innovation in particularly in West Africa?
Okay. Actually, this was one question that I had to rethink when I read it. It's so, for me, from my perspective, I think it's very broad. I started thinking that we have to go back to basic education. Where we begin to change from, like I told you earlier in our quick conversation, I left the university, I dropped out from school. I don't say it in the way that people say it, you get dropped out from school, must go dropped out from school. Not that way, because obviously those guys had so much education than even the people that went to school, and they had admission in the best schools. But I think for me, my self-esteem was going down drastically. The environment was killing me. It wasn't. And I tried to look for professional help from my pastor. Over a year, we did timetable. It didn't work. And I was spending my money doing other stuff. And those things paid. Those things I think I used my money to do then are the things that have taken me to countries. I think, thank God I did those things anyway. But when it's about education, it's why were we even going to school in the first place? You know, education was set up in a certain age, and there was a reason for that, because those industries needed workers. It was straightforward, and those industries funded the unis or the education institute we recite. It was straightforward. Now, we tried to bring the same thing in a region that we do not even understand what we're doing. West Africa, Nigeria, particularly. It's about from the basics. Instead of trying to make a child cram stalls so that they take first position, then remove position so that if this child, I do not understand why people are taking first position in primary school. Who first position help? Even in secondary school, who first position help? But it's more, instead of putting those pressure, now start finding to the first entry way of learning, creativity, sitting arrangement in the classrooms. I've seen a lot of, I've seen the one of females this way, males this way, then the one of which is the one that is mostly used. The teacher is the almighty person standing in front, and we are all, so the ones in front are better than the people behind. So I think from that basis, once we start, then hopefully people growing up will now start trusting the education system.
Yeah.
Because that trust is, that's why we go to start from, you can't get trust from people our age now in terms of education. But people, those kids in primary school that are probably going to trust the education system. They want to trust that system. They want to go into that system. They want to invest into that system. They want to be part of that system. We people are not part of BSc is not even a thing in Ghana anymore. It's now when they get masters in UK, they just pronounce it, I have masters in UK. Nobody wants to say I have masters in US. So those are that because there's no investment. Teachers are not even wanting. They don't even trust the whole sector. There's so many things. And then enabling environment. I told you this was something I have to think. These three things, enabling environment, I think that's more from the government side, and duty there to the school administration, which is the government. The government needs to take care of the whole of our school. It's a huge and long kind of process.
Yeah.
But I think it has to start. Whether it has started, we still do not know because there are no lessons for us to measure any credible thing. People still use textbooks that they, today we are, you know, right now, I have friends that, you know, they say, hey, please do not refer to me as he, refer to me as she. And I respect that and I do that. But people in school are still being taught that a male should be he. And people right now are saying, no, it's no longer that. And they are being respected because every document you're seeing on the international level is respecting it. And you're still teaching it to children. Who do you want them to, like? And then you're still teaching children that, you're preaching inclusion. Yeah, you're preaching inclusion, even intertribal marriage, interreligious marriage. But you're still using the same textbook that says, Simbi's father is Mr. Salami, and Simbi's mother is Mrs. Salami. You know, you're still building inside their head that a family has is the same father and the same son looks alike. A mother and the daughter looks alike because they are the same tradition, the same tribe, the same language. And you're seeing what is resulting is not positive.
Yeah.
But you're still teaching it to the children growing up. So it's, I don't know where to start, but the concept of the 21st century, the forces and the innovation, it can. Organizations have started using informal learning centers to equip that. But I mean, these students spend a lot of time in classroom, and this classroom, unless the ones that would be able to afford a decent school, private school, but the majority in government schools, to be able to do that, we start from small, put out policies that will create an environment in schools, empower teachers, for other people to invest in that sector, and then create trust. Whoa. I hated math in school just because my math teacher was wicked and he was parading himself as being wicked and everyone was shouting wicked and he loved it. And then I came out from the school to find out that it's normal in all the other schools that math teachers are supposed to be wicked. Now, how do you not want us to compete on STEM? We cannot, because mathematics, we hate it. The ones that are doing well right now, if you check the young guys creating tech apps and all, I'm sure that they did not like math in school. It's when they now saw that it's normal, it's coding, it's different and it's sweet, and they started coding, and most of them will all learn online. But from primary school already, we hated math. And then if you like math, you're like a champion. It's not a normal thing. If it's normalized, you have more children. If they are children, they don't know better. It's what excites them. It's now the duty of whoever caregiver that is there to get them excited and then find out, just like we talked about, find out the best way for them to learn. And they will learn. So it's like I said before, I keep saying, it's a long process. It could take decades. It should take more than two governments anyway. Yeah. But for that to happen,
I mean, I'm thinking that it's a lot of it has to do with really training at various levels. So really training the teachers to understand the impact that teaching style sets, I mean, enabling, creating the enabling environments, what the resources, how it all has an impact on what the child learns. And even making everybody feel like stakeholders, making the children feel like stakeholders and taking responsibility for their learning, making the teachers have a sense of pride in that, look, I really want this child to come out of my class and to have really absorbed the teaching so they can go out in society and use it. You know, I think that there's a lot of training involved. I think because if anybody knows how, what a diamond education can be when it's done properly, they would do it because it's just as rewarding for the giver as it is for the receiver. You know, just as you're saying, when you're excited seeing people getting engaged, you're designing these games, you're happy and excited seeing people enjoying them. The people who are engaging in the games are excited. It's a two-way thing. And I don't think anybody, I think everybody benefits from that emotion and that sense of fulfillment. So I really think that a lot of training, deep, thorough, comprehensive training at the level of the kids, the level of the teachers, the level of school administration and setup, and also the level of parents on to support them. Yes. You can't have one message in school, another message at home. You know, it has to be a consistent, holistic approach in order to move us. Because like you were saying, the reality is the educational system now was developed, you know, to cater for the Industrial Revolution. You know, the Industrial Revolution had, you know, it had requirements, it had needs, it needed certain skills. So people were put into formal schools in order to cater for that. So now that period we've evolved from that period, you know. Now we're in the, you know, technological era. We have different needs and different countries have different needs. So it's about what does this country need in order to move forward and progress and to thrive? And how can we ensure that the educational system and the skill set of these citizens is able to match that and even, you know, promote that and develop that and run with that. You know, so it's a two-pronged approach. It's from one end, this is what the society is required, needs to order in order for the infrastructure to go where it needs to go, whether it's renewable energy, whether it's infrastructure, and what education do these kids need to have in order to make that happen? And so it really has to be thought of like that, because education is not just, okay, I went to school, I can read, I can write. You know, it's not something that is in a vacuum. It has a purpose. You know, everything you do, it has to serve a purpose. Otherwise, you know, just like some of us think, you know what, some of those history lessons I did in school, I don't even remember. You know, we don't want this waste of time. You know, we don't want years where you think, oh, I don't even remember, I just crammed and I just did the exam. We don't want that. You know, we want things that you can learn and you use and you add value. You know, add value to yourself, add value to society, you're contributing, you grow, you know, so that education is very enjoyable. It's something that people are running to, like, oh, wow, I was so excited and there's so many other things to learn. It should be a lifelong journey of discovery. I really believe that, and it can be, but it depends on the experience that one has and the way it's promoted and the way it's designed.
Exactly. Like each day, I keep learning. But now I know that whatever I'm learning, I'm eager to apply it. I want to just apply it immediately and see, and just let me know if I can use it again or just dump and learn something else. And that's how learning should be. That's what it should. That is what it is. But that is not what it's we are obtaining here. I agree the one of training, capacity building. There is this concept that is used in Nigeria, this SBMC. So each schools have SBMC. I think it's more like an evolution of PTA. So PTA is just Parent Teacher Association, but SBMC is made up of, it's actually, some states in Nigeria are signing to the education policy, it's the school management board committee, made of the principal, the PTA rep, could be the secretary and the president, made up of the head boy and head girl, made up of one teacher, made up of the youth leader in the community, made up of, I think, spiritual heads, depending on how rural community. You know, Nigeria, it's a very spiritual country. Yes. So these are all the decision makers, so that all of them are all, say, representing, even the women leaders, all of them are representing, because and that is how school is supposed to be. It's a community thing. Yeah. So we all know the teachers teaching your children. Yes. So that if your children, you know who to hope. You know the principals, and then teachers know the parents of this child.
Yes.
If it's that way, that accountability, at least there are a lot of achievements that will happen before we start tackling the government on a higher scale.
Yeah.
So yeah, I quite agree that that capacity building on that level is needed.
Yeah, and things can start. People don't have to wait for, authorities to get involved. But I think things can start at a more local level. And I find at a local level, actually, things can happen quite fast, I wanted to ask you, as we're rounding up, how important is it for people to learn about African history, culture, and heritage, and why? Because obviously, one of the underlying common denominators of your games is that it's all within an African setting.
Yes.
An African geographical setting. So how important is it for you for people to learn about the history, the cultural heritage, and why?
I think if there's a scale of 1 to 10, I think I would go for 1,000, 1 million, 1 billion, 1 trillion, I don't know. But I think it's very, very important. It's very important. And the reason is, I actually summed it up in three. One is identity. I think identity is a good thing. Yeah. I think it's good to be identified with something or with a group of people because it's in its own way. It gives you that that self. I'm not saying that on as a lone person you can't get that, but when you belong to a community and you can identify this community, maybe in the type of food you're eager to talk about, this food, I said this is my people's food, dude. I remember growing up and those nostalgic feelings, or this is my clothes and I'm proud of these clothes because it represents me. And in a place where you see people that you have something in common,
yes,
so you feel relaxed, you're really trusting them easily.
Yes.
So I think identity is good, and that's what learning our listing does. Another is it's good to know your past, because once you know your past, it's also almost a cliche now that if you know your past, you now know the mistakes of your past, so you don't repeat them. But that thing is very true, very, very true. If you know your past, it's not about avoiding mistakes, but even building forward.
Yeah.
So you are aware of someone have done this, and there's that thing. How do I say it? It might not make sense, but it makes sense to me. When someone says calls me my father's name, or my grandfather's name, Obuago, there's this thing I feel when I might not show it because you have to hide it, be humble about it, but there's that thing that my grandfather killed a leopard alone. That means I can kill a leopard alone.
Yes. Because you come from that lineage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
There's that thing when you know that your past has done this, it can now do more. And you can build on. Even the Igbo apprenticeship, where you make money, you serve a master for 7 years, and they settle you, and even settle you, give you customers, give you sellers, and then you're expected to do the same. So that way, people are building, and then you're avoiding mistakes that the other person have made before. So past is good, and then respect. I think if you know yourself, you have begin to have more empathy towards other people. If I'm proud of this is probably relative, but if I'm proud of being Igbo, and I'm so proud of being an Igbo man, I used to wear my Igbo hat, I've been walking around. They had to stop me for security reasons. Because I love it, you will not see me trying to mock someone using speaking English with another accent. Because me, I'm an Igbo man that I love to use my own accent. And when you talk, I was like, look at you. Is English my first language? Go and call an English person so that they speak Igbo with English accent. If you see now, I will speak UK accent for you. So because I'm proud of mine, I can respect another person's culture or other person's belief. So I think that those are things why I feel it's, and that is the things that we, maybe not as direct as I just said, but we want each of our games to be able to represent a part of this. And it has even inspired other people. And when people say, you did one about Igbo people, I say, tell me your own story now, or Kuma, do your own with your own stories.
Yes.
Like in the comics now, you could see about Queen Amina.
Yes.
You just see, so it's more people are coming in the gaming industry, trying to bring represent their own stories as well. So it's another way we try to inspire that.
Yes. No, I hear you. I'm curious because I want to distill one of the driving forces. So I'm just going to zoom in on this a little bit. What do you think made you, what was it in your upbringing, in your makeup that made you proud of your culture and heritage? What was it, something your parents did, how you were brought up, what was happening in your house? What was it? Because that's quite important, because I do think it's being lost in a lot of homes. And as a result, we're seeing people, you know, feeling a bit rootless. So it'd be nice to actually identify what it is about your context that made you appreciate your culture.
I think the fact that I'm Igbo helped me really. No one has asked me this question, but I'm thinking about the fact that I'm Igbo really, really helped me. Especially when I made the decision to drop out. I'm a Christian, so that's it. I believe whatever I'm doing, I try to connect to God as much as possible. But being Igbo gave me this self-assurance. Like, I already saw my dad. My dad did not finish school. My mom did not finish school, and they were very, very, very good at what they do, very successful in what they did before he died. And he died so young. But he was able to achieve so much, so much. And I looked around. You come to my village, you see big houses that people don't live in. They only come back during Christmas. And you now hear that all these people, none of them went to school. It's sheer hard work, like, you know, hustle. And then there is this cliche in Nigeria that Igbo man likes money and Igbo man and business. Don't play with Igbo man and business. No, oh, I think when you're little, you keep hearing all of this. This is the same thing that goes around. Like, and there's this part. I don't want to bring this up, but it's fact. It happened. The Civil War.
Yes.
It happened. The Biafra War happened. The Southeastern people lost. Igbo people majority lost, and a lot of all Igbo people assets were seized, and they were given £2. Each person was given £2 regardless of what you had. And this was what they used to rebuild. And it's the same mentality. You could just Google it. People, £2, Biafra, war, civil war. You could see this. And it's normal conversation that these people build up with £2.
Wow.
You know, when as a child, you keep hearing these, these statements about your people, how proud you should at this.
Yeah.
Giving you guys the next mantle, but it's not in a condescending way that if you failed, you failed woefully.
Yes.
It's like if you fail, you're moving. Don't. And there are proverbs and names that actually confirm all of this. So they are normal cliche in Igbo language. So yeah, I think that.
Yes.
And 1 million other things.
So you had it sounds like you. I mean, obviously you had amazing role models just all around you, from the nuclear role models to the community role models. And it sounds like there was also a lot of direct engagement.
Yeah.
Because I think there was something you were saying about the educational system being, involving all aspects of the community, you know, the chief, the head girl, head boy, parents. Yeah. And when you were talking, I must honestly say, I was thinking, do people have that time these days? They should, because it's really important, and it's ideal, you know, and it is the priority. The children and their education is the future, so you can't joke around with it. So people have to work really hard at work, and they have to make ends meet, but they have to also find a way of giving children the time they need for their nurturing. But it's so obvious that it was that nurturing that is what made
who you are. In this regard, more of
yes, please go on.
Sorry, you're breaking.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Okay, so I stopped you. I thought you stopped talking out. So I said, in that regard, I feel it's right now the people that are doing that work are more like the nuclear family, and now there are more walls because of insecurity. So you see a parent, maybe the dad or the mom, they'll focus on their child, but they will not want the child to leave the compound. And rightfully so, because right now there's a lot of insecurity and nobody trusts anybody anymore. But I think that time where we are growing up, we are fortunate to, I can go to the neighbor's house and eat food, and I'll be hearing their gist. you know, or you go, children there were always in clan, you know, mm-hmm. their clan, because the clan means we go for scavenging at the same time, and we look for parts to build stuff. We played so much games, so many games. The rubber ring, it was, rubber ring was more like a forex on its own, like it's a big market. You can sell in different streets. We played ball as our clan. Mm. We fought, kids, well, we did all of those stuff. Okay. I remember we'll be in the street once, my mom's car. If you see where my mom's car will be, in the beginning of the street, I will hear zero.
Yes.
If it's our ball, a pack ball, all of us, there's a way we can put our head through our gate. Then, but everybody, we jump and we'll pretend that we did not go out that day.
I remember those days. Yes, yes.
So we're going out of it.
Yes.
But I think all of these things helped. It wasn't just go to school and then come back to the house and then go to school.
No.
It was mad.
Yes, because play, for me, play is learning. You know, kids have to, you know, after school we were playing the whole day. You know, you come back home at sunset, you know, and you learn, you fall off the tree, you have a bike without brakes, you know, you get into scrapes, you have even a car accident, you don't want to tell your parents about it. You know, there's so many things that happen that toughen you up and you learn. So it's like a mini world. The play of the child is the mini world, is where they're learning in a safe space for their peers to engage and to test boundaries. And it's very, and even the physical aspect and dealing with bullies and, you know, defending people, or what, it's very, very, it's a very big part. And I think we have to make sure that's brought back.
I don't know why, because when we were kids, it's very hard to differentiate the men and the women, because a girl will beat you and we'll all laugh. You know, I don't know how all of those things just changed. It was like, now that I'm actually thinking of it, there's a game, One One Touch, it came out from games we played when we were kids. There is Sway, we've turned Sway into a game. Which other one? I think there is one we're actually working on right now. We keep thinking of those games that at least their kids now have the opportunity. Yeah. So many iPad and PS5 going on and social media.
Yes.
That people now forget those because they are part of our culture.
Yes. You know,
folklore, running around in groups. In groups, you don't have your groups, you belong to you, for so many reasons. But we don't do that anymore. Collaboration,
negotiation, compromise, yes, accepting defeat, accepting failure, accepting shame, you know, all these things that happen in the group,
you get bullied over again. That one day you now start up for yourself,
yes. Yeah, no, these are things that I think mustn't be lost. That the importance of it mustn't be like, oh, no, it's just important to have formal education. I think, for me, that is what makes people's personalities. And I feel the more children are out engaging and playing and getting roughed up and with their group, the more social they become, the more open they become, the more they're able, when they kind of grow up, they're able to go out there and approach people and suggest things. And I feel it affects your, actually, you know, how even outgoing you are.
Yeah, you know?
It's very deep. And I feel that people have to really watch not losing that. I think, you know, some households obviously still have that, but a lot of kids are spending a lot of time indoors and not doing enough of the physical and just being in the world and finding things and finding little animals or insects and all the things that are just very exciting.
We did a lot of, I recognize it's animal, what is the word?
Animal abuse.
Yes. But you know how many frogs, oh, poor frogs.
Yes.
Grasshoppers, we operated in.
Yes.
We wanted to be NEPA. We wanted to have, medical skills at 4, 5, 6, 7 years.
Yes.
We even go hunting.
Yeah.
Went hunting. We learned, We went to take so there is this method of you steal people's pigeon.
Yeah.
You set it up and you steal it. You cut the feathers and you feed them sugar and feed and rice. Before they grow by their feathers, they will now be yours.
Yeah.
And then they will go and come back. Someone else will steal them.
Yeah.
And it was the market. And one day you see your own in someone's plan. You say, you guys will fight it too. And whoever has the most claim will collect the bread and we go in home.
Yes. Wow. Interesting. That's fascinating. Wow, this has been amazing. So I think the question that a lot of viewers will be asking is how to get access to your games.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes. Anyone can get access to our games directly on our website, www.nimcardgames.com.
Okay.
NimcardGames.com. Or you could just search any social media, not any social media, but Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You just search for Nimcard Games or just Nimcard. Or you could just Google us, Nimcard Games, and get more information on any of our games.
Thank you so much. That's amazing. People will definitely be following up with that. And I will certainly be getting someone ordering. And they deliver. You deliver. You're based in Abuja, and they're delivered.
We deliver worldwide. On our website, it actually has this mechanic thing that calculates your location. So it runs exactly on your
location. Fantastic. And what's next for you before we round up? What's next on your agenda? Still designing more games, more and more games on the agenda?
Yeah, more games, better production, value for money rate, inspiring more people to come into the industry. Basically, the things we've been doing only each time we keep asking why not, and we keep moving forward. We want everything to be better, but basically the same thing of making them better.
Fantastic. Kenechukwu, it's been more than a pleasure to speak with you. I've thoroughly enjoyed our chat, and we'll definitely be circulating the podcast, and I'm sure a lot of viewers will really enjoy and learn a lot and be playing your game. So thank you very much for designing these wonderfully inspiring games and really sharing your wonderful skills with us for us to enjoy these very inspiring games. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Aliza. It's my pleasure. And thanks again for inviting me. I actually enjoyed the conversation.
I'm happy you did. I'm glad it wasn't boring.
It wasn't.
Fantastic. No, I enjoyed it very much. So thank you so much. And we'll be in touch. Thank you very much.
Oh, definitely.
Take care. Bye.